Welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari Shrike, the artist and creator behind Not Sorry Art. I'm so excited to talk art and creativity with you, so grab a drink, grab a snack, and let's dive in. I also wanted to say that today's episode is sponsored by my book. I have a book coming out. I'm so proud of this, guys. The links are already up. I'll have them in the show notes. But the book is called Modern Still Life, From Fruit Bowls to Disco Balls. It is my take on a step-by-step painting book. I am really excited about it. Not only does it have like motivational tips and tricks to keep you going in your practice, but it also has clear and beautiful and full color breakdowns of the step-by-step process in my paintings. So I could not be more excited about it. If you wanted to check it out, pre-order it. It would help me more than you even know. Hey y'all, welcome back to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari. Thanks for being here. I'm so excited for today's episode as I had the absolute pleasure to interview the artist and creative Britt Cheetah. Britt is a Eugene, Oregon-based artist who is known for their abstract diagram pieces that communicate emotions, perspective, and healing. As Britt describes their art on their website, Britt makes art as a way to heal and offer back their community some gifts of resilience. That's so beautiful. I have cherished Britt's presence on Instagram for years. I am a longtime follower, as their diagrams and art have truly helped me to understand complicated emotions in ways that I never had before. As they share in this conversation, Britt's creative process grew as they pursued healing from their own traumas. The strong response from the online community to Britt's work has helped them develop a full-time practice and inspired all of us to meditate on our most vulnerable thoughts and feelings in fresh new ways. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I invite you to check out the show notes to all of Britt's channels and links. Truly, they are a resource for good, and I so value following them. And as a special gift for my listener, Britt has been so kind to offer an extra 20% off discount for prints on their site. The code is NSA20, and you can find Britt's print page along with all the rest of the links and details in the show notes, of course. Enjoy the episode, guys. I know I enjoyed this conversation. Hi, Britt. Thank you so much for being here. If you are not watching this as a video, my cheeks are like up to my eyeballs. I'm so excited. I'm grinning. I'm beyond delighted to have you on as a guest. Can we just start with a good old like introduction? Who are you? What kind of art do you make? I was just saying that I think our audience has probably, hopefully, a good amount of overlap. So hopefully this doesn't feel too redundant, but who are you? What kind of art do you make? And if I can ask, like, what got you into making art?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Britt. I live in Eugene in Oregon, Pacific Northwest. And I describe my work as abstract art, but I use a lot of text in it. And so I do make like larger, like wall-sized paintings. My wife builds frames. We kind of have this like fine art thing. But the thing that I would say I'm like known for on the internet are this type of art that I call abstract diagrams. And it's something that I started just doing years ago, where I'd basically make abstract art and then label the components with text, kind of like a key. So drawing on genres of like graphs, infographics, and actually like memes, like in the way that people will take like an image that represents a dynamic and then label and relabel it. I think I was inspired by all of those sort of types of creating, and then kind of just came up with something that I really hadn't seen other people do. It just sort of like developed over years, and I just had to come up with a name for it. So I call them abstract diagrams. I don't know. I still been calling them that for years, but I'm still like a little bit unsure if that's the right way to call them. But that's, so I've made like tons of these now, and that's what I think a lot of people who follow me online would have come across my work from.
That's wonderful. I love that you gave him a name, because I was curious when I was writing questions. I was like, what are the illustrations? But like, I know you're a painter, so I'm like, I feel like they're paintings, but I think that's a beautiful way of expressing them. And by the way, like, I'm going to link to your socials and also provide some images, because I really think your work is incredibly unique. And it's one of those, like, I don't know, ever since I've been following you, I start thinking in diagrams kind of now. Like, it's art that like, I think I would enjoy it in a museum setting. Like, it would be impactful, but because you've been kind of a slow drip for years. Like I have an 8-year-old. And so sometimes when we're talking about like a harder like theme in life, I'll either pull out one of your illustrations because you have a ton of
Oh
them.
My gosh.
Beautiful. Or I'll try to like use that language that you've kind of built to explain ideas. And it's so beautiful. And I think you've really given such a gift to, I think, anyone who's come into contact with your work. And I know that it's like, it's probably more like given such a big like impression on people's lives. I know it has for me, and I guess I can only speak to myself, but it's really the kind of work that like sticks with you for like days and months. And it's like haunting in the best way possible.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's really kind of you to say. It is cool because it is something that I think that is sort of novel. It can strike people as novel, but it also instantly feels familiar. I think that's pretty accessible. Like, if you have a certain sort of, I think maybe it does require a little bit of like a visual literacy, but if you have that little bit where you can get it, people are always messaging me like, "Oh my gosh, you're in my head." Now I'm like thinking of my whole life in these terms and like making my own. And it's kind of cool because it is a language. And I think, you know, I really feel like, you know, everybody is creative and everybody has things like to communicate, and that, you know, we don't necessarily embrace like the breadth of the ways that we have to communicate in our culture. And so I love it when people kind of get that sort of inkling of like freedom and confidence to be like, oh, I could communicate myself in other ways and this way. I always think that's exciting.
Yes. And it's beautiful. And I love that we're calling it a language because it really does feel like it. And I know that it's inspired other people, both like experiencing it and making it. And it just, I love it. But I wanted to, I'm curious, how did you get into it? Like, what was your first idea? You mentioned memes. I'm very curious if like how important to your process that was, because I love memes. Yeah. I have done a whole series of them. I think they're the everyman's art. I think we have more visual literacy than we know, especially people who don't consider themselves artists. And I love how you draw on that. But I'm curious, how did you get into it and what's the relevancy of memes?
Yeah, I wish I had more to say about memes, except for that I just think that when I started doing them, really drawing more off of like, I have a science background. And so I had made a lot of graphs in my life and sort of was like a visual spatial thinker. And so I was organizing my thoughts that way. But then when I saw memes, and also I saw my art being shared in the same way memes were, and I would see people, like, I actually don't love it when people do this. So I'm not going to like, I don't love it when people like take my art and like meme it, like change the labels and stuff. Like sometimes that gives me weird feelings. It's not always bad, but it's kind of weird, whatever.
Oh, that's fair.
But seeing people like, interact with my art in the same way, I had this sort of click where I was like, oh, I understand how this fits into, I guess, back to the idea of a visual language. I think memes, especially the type of memes where you like label two people or two elements or three elements of an image, was kind of coming up at the same time as I was. And so I think that there that added to the sense of like instant understanding and like familiarity people had with it. And so, I mean, I think people would probably got it otherwise, but something about it felt bit more like zeitgeisty and immediate, I guess, with that connection with memes doing the same thing. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I need to think about it more, but there's definitely a connection there, I can tell.
Yeah. I mean, I think even if all we do is sort of distill it down to like memes are accessible, we think in memes. I think anyone who does the work of saying like, to lay people, you know, hey, like the assets and tools you have, even now, even though you haven't been to art school or like, you know, don't consider yourself an artist, like you can engage in this stuff. I think I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but like, I'm a big passionate believer in like, you know, media literacy. And I think a lot of like, just like the basics of understanding art and memes feeds into that beautifully. And I feel like one thing you've done, I don't think it's like your main mission. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like by sort of combining like the meme format, and I'm using that loosely, again, I would definitely recommend looking at the art before listening to the episode. But like by loosely sort of plugging into that framework, I feel like a lot more people who maybe wouldn't have considered themselves like art lovers typically, like I feel like have found your work and kind of come into the fold. And I think that's incredibly like honorable and valuable work to do.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot at stake in terms of like trying to prove myself as an artist. I will actually get to answer your question about how this came up because that'll make more sense. But I think because of that, I have people all the time, like it's really a common message I get where people say, I've never understood or felt connected to abstract art before. I've never thought of myself as an art person. I've never bought an original painting before. Like that's a very, very common thing. And I that makes me really happy because it to me, it doesn't even feel like I'm introducing them to like the art world because I also feel on the outside. I kind of feel like, yeah, we can just do this on our own. It's almost that kind of a vibe for me. Even though I feel very friendly towards the art world, I also just don't have a lot of I mean, I'm using the art world
I get
in, you know, there's that could obviously mean it's obviously everything, but I mean it a bit specifically of like maybe like higher art or whatever.
Yeah, no, I get
Anyway,
what you say. No, I always say it as like there's the art world, which is like anyone buying, sharing, consuming art, you're technically part of the art world. But then there's also the art world, like capitalized, where it's like
exactly.
e-tip and yeah, so I get what you're saying, totally.
So I guess how to get started as an artist. I mean, I think like look back and always see certain like threads of creativity in my life. Like I don't know, sort of a creative kid, but not an artsy kid. I didn't draw or paint. I liked to write as like a teenager, but I liked to do social things. Like I like to connect people, which takes a lot of like communication and creativity, like building community. And that's still a big part of my art, actually. So I look back and I see that like I would say like my skills, I'm not gonna act like they came from nowhere, but they did not come from like art education. You know what I mean? So they just sort of came from like regular parts of life. I was homeschooled, and so I particularly had like no art education. Like in fourth grade, for a little while, there was like this thing my parents set up with some other friends' parents where we went to this artist's house on Thursday afternoons for a couple hours, and she had a studio in her garage. And she just sort of exposed us. She had like a pottery wheel, and she had like paper mache stuff, and she had paints, and basically like she'd sort of show us like 1 week each for like 6 weeks, like how to each do kind of each thing, and then it was like an open space. And I just did that in fourth grade, but and I don't remember specific things from it, but it was an interesting thing because when I opened oil paints for the first time like 5 years ago, I was like, oh my God, I've smelled this before. So I had some
Oh, I
exposure.
love
Like I
that.
wouldn't quite say like no exposure, but I had almost no exposure to art because I was just so young. I don't think that really left me with any, like, it didn't really get me going on a track.
Right.
So I started making art when I was 30. I'd finished my doctorate in physical, I studied physical therapy, and I was actually like pretty sick at that point. I had kind of was experiencing some pretty like persistent post-trauma stuff that was coming
Yeah.
up very somatic. So basically, I was like nauseous and like had like vertigo all the time, so I was like laying down a lot, and
Yeah.
so I really needed a hobby. I needed something in my life that wasn't serious. That everything, I mean, without getting into like all of the, I don't know, the heavy, too heavy of stuff, but I think I just like a lot of things that felt really serious, and I'd felt kind of like in survival mode, and like there's a lot at stake all the time, throughout my life up until my late 20s, and so I was looking when I started art for like something that was not serious. Did not want a career. And it was just like totally for me. And I started sharing art online in like 2017, which I know is a little bit after you, but it was definitely in that like earlier era algorithm where you could be pretty like personal and in some ways like not polished, but also still kind of connect to a new audience, which was obviously like a something I look back on now is like a really sweet
Golden
and
era,
brief moment in time.
Yes, 100%.
But in terms of like, you know, it kind of becoming a career artist, I started selling little bits of art in like 2018 and 19, just really in response to people asking me, which is significant to me because I really was never trying to make it a career, which I don't think there's anything wrong with trying. I think it's great to try, but I was actually trying kind of not to. I was resistant. I told people no, I was not going to be selling anything for like a couple of years, and then slowly I just started doing it, and it ended up just sort of being this like really like sweet experience. Like people were so like a lot of the relationships felt really genuine, and the art felt like something I could really like offer people. I don't know, it felt really good, and it just grew very slowly. I continued to work as a physical therapist, you know, for a good 5+ years of this, and just ended up quitting my job like a year ago last week, actually.
Oh
And my
my God.
wife did too. My wife actually went full time to help me run the business side of things about a year almost before I did, and then now it's both of us doing this. So it's just kind of incredible, actually, to me when I realize what has happened.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That is magical. I kept getting goosebumps during that. And I think I like to think, sometimes it's easy to gloss over like the dark kind of part of a story. You want to get quickly to the like happily ever after sort of moment. But I think that's, you mentioned that you sort of had an audience that was really, sweet and receptive. And I am a big believer that you sort of get back what you put out. As far as content, like there's a lot of social media that can be really like daunting and draining, but it's kind of like the core of like why I kind of can't quit. Cause like if you put out a message, you'll get people who get it back. And it's really wonderful. But I think that's one thing that seems like a thread throughout that entire story is just like an honesty, a vulnerability, an openness with your content, with your story, with the way you show up, with the way you create community, throughout your work. And I'm curious, like, it's fair if you don't have an answer because it might just be like that's just my personality. But like, how did you like when did you start getting that like feedback loop of like, hey, being kind of a space for people, like transferring some of these ideas and themes around, healing and it makes sense with your job and like even with the science background, I always think of science and art sort of on like a spectrum. One just has like a lot more accountability and higher stakes, and the other incredibly low stakes and like much less accountability, which is nice for me. And obviously you at some point too. So but I'm curious, like how did that part of your journey start? Like when did you start? Like how did you choose what to make art about? And I'm asking because people ask this all the time. I'm curious, like just from a fan standpoint, but also like my number one most asked question from people is like, well, how do I know what to make art about? And since your story is so authentic and like I'm curious, like what started that art making?
Well, I was really, I think because it started so personal, that's what I was thinking about. And so that's what I was making art about. Initially, I was making art. When I say for myself, I just mean that I wasn't trying to communicate something to other people. I was trying to like process stuff myself. And I still make art that way, though. I typically at this point, I share art that I feel like will communicate something. So I think I've made a shift from when I was like very early, just like posting random stuff all the time. Okay, so I actually, because my brain's going to like multiple different places, this like feels like a complex thing. I started making a lot of the art that I make, which is like it seems like it's like about mental health and that it's kind of like very vulnerability forward, but I started making it a couple years actually before I started therapy. So when I made it, it was very, very personal, and it was also before like the mental health movement became such like a thing. Like I feel like now you can look at my work and almost like situate it maybe in a bit in like a bit of like a historical moment and like a social like a conversation and a context. But when I was doing like when I started having like really so I started having really debilitating panic attacks when I was like 25 to the point that I wasn't really able to like work, and I was just very like physical. They were very physical experiences. I didn't realize they were panic attacks for a long time. I just was like, why am I so sick?
Well, if I can just kind of pick up on the like having kind of a moment in the zeitgeist, I think all of us kind of read Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents at the same time. I mean, not literally, but I mean, I think a lot of us, like I've been going to therapy for, I guess, like a decade now, so a long time. But it does feel like I noticed during that time, like the world all started saying, like they started, I don't know, I the word awakening even doesn't even feel like it fits, but enough of us were like, hey, maybe that's not like an individual problem. Like I feel like a shift that we've had, and it's manifested in a lot of ways, is we're moving away from like it's an individual failing. And it's more of like I am a symptom of systems that are larger than me, and in multiple capacities, like generational trauma and like systemic, all classes, all kinds of things kind of compound us. And I think why that was such an important moment, I think it's amazing that I do think you were definitely a big part of that, is because it's sort of like for the first time in a while, like we have this like willingness to be like to buck this idea of like radical personal responsibility. And like, I'm all for personal responsibility, but I think by allowing the space to be like, we are all sort of more connected. America has a very hyper individualistic kind of culture. I think, I mean, I think your work is really profound in sort of offering that to the community. I'm not sure where you were fully going with your answer, but like, that's a lot of what I get from your work. And I think it's been really, really helpful. And I will say, I also love looking at the comments on your post. Like, you're
Yeah,
one
at
of the
the
few
end, yeah.
posts where I'll like open up and kind of like curl up with a good comment section. It's so sweet. And everyone is like, yeah, I mean, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you. You know, I'm going a little out of order, but like, you are a master at creating community. And I am so glad in the beginning you mentioned that it is a creative expression for you, because I fully believe that. And I do that. I see that in other people and how good they are at it. And I like, it's such a like rock star moment. But I'm curious as far as that, like, how important was community? And I know once you're an artist and you're sharing, there is like inherently a community aspect, right? You're not just journaling, you're sharing it with the internet. Like, I'm curious what that was like for you, you know, both in the beginning and then now as an artist.
Okay, this fits perfectly because I remembered what I was going to say and it
Okay.
links right to that, which was that when I started like experiencing major mental health stuff, I didn't know anyone else who did, which now it seems sort of crazy to imagine that you couldn't really like identify like a real social or like a parasocial like relationship with somebody that had like mental health stuff. But like I remember my wife had a coworker at this retail job she worked, this guy that she was like acquaintances with, and he was like, "Why is Britt sick?" And she ended up telling him, and he's like, "Oh, I had panic attacks." And like Danielle like came home and told me, we're like, someone else has experienced this, you know, which now that sort of seems strange because it's almost like now it's like seems so common. But when I first started making my art and sharing it, I had that sense of like, I think it was like a very genuine vulnerability in the sense that I really was like, you know, putting this sort of work out there and not knowing how people would respond. And so, you know, it was interesting because you said like, you know, like, or I guess it's sort of making me think of like the concept of like a safe space. And I do think, I don't want to like underplay the fact that I in some ways have sort of facilitated that. But when I think about what has made my Instagram safe space, like feel like the safe space, I mean, first of all, it's just that I don't go viral, so I don't get trolls. I think that's a huge part of it.
That's a
Like my
huge
audience
play.
has just grown by word of mouth, like friends invite friends, and then everybody's nice. So that's like a huge thing. Like I get wanting to go viral. There's a part of me that wants to go viral at times, but it is like it does really like mess up the vibe also, because you get all these other
100%.
people who are not your people. So, you know, that's changed. But when I first started posting, I didn't feel safe. So I was actually like anonymous for 5 years. I didn't show my face or use my voice in any of my content until about 18 months ago. I was very just cautious for a whole like number of reasons. But I basically just, if I thought about, I was being very like open in some ways with my art, like telling these personal stories, but I didn't want it to be connected to me because like a lot of people in my real life didn't know I was doing this. I had this sort of like
Double life.
secret. It was secret. I was like my Hannah Montana thing or something. I like was like doing my I like my normal life, and then I had this like internet life. And I remember talking about it a lot. I would for years I would talk about the tension between wanting to be known and wanting to be safe and how those can feel at odds. I think that it feels particularly resonant to other people in like the trans and queer community, and people who experience a tremendous like safety cost to being known, and maybe experience like a lot of loss related to that. And I've experienced that. And so I think that it can create, you know, there's a certain like set of life experiences which give you this gut feeling that like, you know, you're always sort of like one slip away from sort of, you know, people find out too much and the gig is up or something like that. And everyone was really nice to me. And I think that's like things like that I can't take credit for. Is it just these people? Like, I mean, I just don't even know. I totally believed like people were mean at that point in my life. I didn't like believe like the inherent goodness of people, which I do now, but I was like super self-protective. And these people were just like sending me messages in response to these conversations, just being like, "I totally get that. We like you give us so much. We don't need to know anymore. We feel like we know you. You seem like a real person to us. And there's no rush. You don't owe us anything. You don't have to prove anything. Take your time. We'll still be here." And it was like, I mean, such an incredible privilege to experience and receive that kind of like openness and goodwill from, I mean, anyone, much less like thousands of people. So when I eventually decided to start showing like a bit more personal self online. I remember I made this art piece. This is an example of one of my abstract diagrams. So it's two stick figures, and one has a like a solid, thick black circle around it, and it's labeled safe. And then the other stick figure has like a wreath of like flowers and vines. It's like definitely like porous and spacious around it, and it's labeled safe enough. And that for me was like a big shift to be able to like sort of take care of my own parts of myself that were like, we don't feel safe, to kind of make the shift to say this is safe enough. And truly what happened was, it's just like people were really nice to me for 5 years and build my trust, which honestly is so slow. Like, I mean, this is nothing to brag about, but there's every incentive in this sort of like late stage capitalism Instagram world for them to see me as a content producer, to feel entitled to me giving them visual content that meets certain needs for them. And then for me to see them as numbers or sales leads or something like that. And I've been just so insistent on not seeing them that way. And I do think that energy is like reflected back to me. I still spend hours and hours every week, like replying to DMs and comments. I know so many people who follow me. Like, I have this feeling that like you could show me like 100 random usernames and I would be able to like honestly like pick out like I just know so many. I always like see everyone who likes my posts. I have to make little mental notes of it. I've had years-long conversations going on with tons of people, and it's not about content, it's not about engagement or business. I would call them my stranger friends because that's how they feel to me. But you know, I think people just behave worse online than they do in person. And so as much as you can bring the I'm a real person energy to the internet, it sort of like brings out that inherent, like natural compassion and curiosity that everybody has.
Right.
So, you know, that makes,
I love
that's a
that.
Part of it too.
No, I love that. And that was a beautiful explanation. You could definitely tell like that you think about it. And I think that that's important too. I know I've been in this sort of like quasi influencer space for long enough to have talked with enough people who like, not everyone thinks like that about their audience. And it's not ill will necessarily, but I think sometimes there's a thoughtlessness. And I will say, like, you know, the day-to-day of like, you know, your audience exists in this little tiny phone or like an iPad or some, you know, it can be easy to get detached. But I think kind of to your point, when you treat it, you know, like a community, and I know it seems like, well, of course you would, and definitely, but you know, I even like the fact that you have like your safety analogy with a little garden around it, because whenever I like teach about social media or talk about it, I always say like, treat your audience like a garden, where it's like, instead of like, you know, pushing like a direct sale or, you know, like you just like, you water them, you give them sunshine, you show up, you're good. And then like, if something blooms where you can like, hey, they bought a print and you can pay your light bill, or, you know, cause it is a job still. And I think that that's sometimes where this more recent surge of like, you're an internet person, you're a commodity, can kind of come from, especially in a world where like financial security is like a little trepidatious. I think that's becomes kind of a target unintentionally for people.
Absolutely.
But to your point, I think, you know, treating like, and it sounds so, you know, I feel it's like, it sounds so simple, but like, you know, treating people with respect is, you know, the key, I think, to creating that community. And it brings me, I'm curious, cause like, this is an idea that I've been like tending to for a few months now. I've had this idea of like reclaiming professionalism. The idea being like, when I hear the word professionalism, I think, unfortunately, my mind goes to like those really horrific like HR policies about like how women can wear their hair or like how people are supposed to show up. And it's professionalism, I think, in a lot of ways has been used in a way, in some ways to hurt people, but if nothing else, sort of uphold this current hierarchy. But I was thinking with like,
yeah, absolutely,
towards like Gen Z being so vulnerable, that there's going to be this pendulum swing back. And I think what that's going to look like is like us re-engaging with what professional looks like. And I think you've done a really good job of it, where it's like, it's about having boundaries. And I even think, to your credit, of like, you know, not showing your whole identity in the beginning, I actually think there's something really sweet and special about it. And to a lesser extent, that's what I did. I remember the first time I went live was the pandemic. So I had been making content for like just shy of 5 years, and I had shown a couple selfies and like nothing crazy. Like, really anonymous was really important to me. I didn't tell any of my friends when I closed my account. Like, I needed that safety for myself. But it's, I think it's a good point that you brought up, where you can like slowly ease into it. You can find that safety. You can, because it is developing a skill to create that kind of community. I know you were saying like a lot of it's that you've got really nice people and gravitate towards you. But I think even the fact that, you know, hey, virality isn't the way to get that community. It's through like showing up and being compassionate and word of mouth. That's a skill you gained while you were in that more safe kind of part of your career. And once you develop that skill during that safety, there was a little bit of like, you can open up a little bit. And I always want to respect that, because I think sometimes there's this push to be like so vulnerable, so open. And if you're not ready, like you have to protect that and be safe with that, you know? And
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Your story exemplifies that like beautifully.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that there is a pressure in our society where relationships and emotions are commodified, that we need to like perform certain relational cues to instantly create certain like emotional and relational payoffs. And so if we can, so there's this idea that we sort of like show up and we sort of like act happy, even if we're not happy, and we act like we like people, even when we don't like people or whatever. Yeah. And there's, I wouldn't even say that it's sincere or insincere. I think it's practical. I get it as a currency. But for me, I really had the privilege. I mean, I had a lot of like economic instability throughout a lot of my life. And that's how I oftentimes think of myself. But by the time I started making art, I, for the first time in my life, like had this like way to make money. I was a physical therapist. I had a license. I could make like a living wage, and I didn't need to like hustle or like make something happen. And in that sense, I really have constantly had to reorient myself, because it is, social media is such a whirlwind, that this is like a real relationship. And so I opened up, I let people earn my trust. I didn't like immediately like, and then I think vice versa. I think I earned people's trust. And I've had a lot of followers who have followed me for a long time who engage with my art in really meaningful ways. A lot of times those are the folks in those comment sections that I also just like curl up and I'm like, how did I get so lucky? But it's like, you know, I think it can be so easy to like get all in your head about like how you're presenting, when if you can kind of just like pop that bubble and like be like, how do I actually feel safe? Do I actually trust these people? Do I actually want to share these with them? And being just sort of finding out the answers to those questions, and then doing something that's sort of like honest and creative with that, but not pushing yourself. There's a lot of freedom in that. And I hope that like, as you know, Gen Z, I think there's so much, I love how open Gen Z is. And I also hope that they don't grow up with the feeling that they have to be that way, that they can also, as they get older, sort of find that those sort of like inner guidance of what feels good and what doesn't. Because there's obviously, you know, privacy is such a wonderful thing that I think is undervalued, and self-knowledge, that wonderful stretch where you know something about yourself before you tell other people. Those are really like precious human experiences that I think we can just miss out on when we're sort of like front loading our presentation with like our most like perky and social and strong sort of like presence, if that makes sense.
100%. Yeah. And I'll say, you know, even to the point of like, you know, social media requires you, I would say even like a hyper form of capitalism. Like, it's like you long for the days of just 40 hours a week. It's so bad sometimes.
Yeah.
You're not careful and you're not really intentional with it. And, you know, you don't like the natural human sort of ups and downs. Like, you go through, even the most optimistic person will go through like a season or two or multiple where you know, you don't feel super personable, and that can be different for everyone. I was just reading, what is it? Rick Rubin's book, the one with the circle and a dot. I can't think of the name of it, but there is one part where he was saying that like human cycles of creativity are celestial. Like, they're not, they don't fit into capitalism. They're not going to be a 40 hour a week thing that you can maintain. And so I think professionalism sort of as a reclaimed idea offers you sort of that ability to be like, here's my boundaries. Here's how I'm going to show up, so that you can have those moments where maybe you do like need a break, or you find out something about yourself that you're not ready to share yet, or you start sharing with an in-person community. And, you know, it's like giving yourself that, even just that pause and that little bit of space where you don't have to immediately commodify it and run to social media, I think is like a good practice. And it's hard to articulate. And I think you do a good job of it with your, you know, with your artwork, but it's a good conversation worth having, especially as more and more people have an aspect of their persona or even their job manifesting online. And I think that's all the more reason to like see what you're doing and follow you and like, you know, process your work. And
Yeah, really quick, that makes me think of something that I heard Tessie McMillan-Cotton talking about this morning on TikTok about like early the original definition of emotional labor and kind of this idea where you are having to suppress your own emotions and project an emotion that you don't actually feel as like this kind of original concept of emotional labor, and how you see that a lot in like public-facing jobs in retail and that kind of a thing. And I think a lot about being a good employer. I have like a sort of robust sense of like labor justice beliefs and stuff that were all developed in as an employee working for like companies. And now that I'm working for myself, I'm thinking a lot about, I actually feel like I have so many more questions than answers, like what it looks like to like apply my like labor justice sort of ideals with me and myself here, you know. But part of it is not asking ourselves to do a level of emotional labor that is dehumanizing. And so I think if you set yourself up where your job is to project a certain emotional tenor all the time, regardless of how you're feeling, like in the same way that like our creativity comes and goes, I think that's totally connected to the fact that just like our emotional state fluxes and our energy level fluxes. And that if we don't kind of account for that in the budget at the beginning, and for me, that means like I've never sort of said like, oh, my Instagram is like a always happy place to be. Like it very much reflects where I am, and that's just sort of the name of the game. And people stay if they like it. And by not putting on myself that idea that I need to always show up with something that's going to make people's day better, that allows me a kind of dignity that I think gives me, will hopefully give me longevity. And that's partly, you know, that's something that was missing in the work that I did in my younger years that w was so kind of like burning out in like really like I would say like a injuring the self kind of way.
That's, and I love that. I love hearing the thoughts behind that because I've seen that thought manifested in your artwork. The burnout graphic is one that I really ought to just like buy it and put it in my studio because I think about it a lot. And I love how you're like integrating like work justice, labor justice into your own, you know, and it sounds like these really kind of like abstract themes and idea, but yeah, be a good boss to yourself. And I think, you know, that was a kind of a mistake I made in the beginning. I think I made a lot of good choices and, you know, obviously a lot of mistakes, but I came from a place where I am a laborer. Like my parents worked in, you know, warehouses and construction. And in college, I was a student athlete with a job getting through that. And then I only had that like laborer's mentality. And so when I plugged in the social media, I was like, oh yeah, work every single day and never take a day off. And just, you know, it just was an easy transition because like that sort of borderline, maybe actually exploitative sort of labor practice was like my water, like that's all I knew. And like a big change that I've had to make that's been admittedly kind of hard to do is like learning how to be a better boss to myself, which brings me to one of your pieces that I saw recently that I again had one of those like, oh, I need to process this moments, which was like, and it's something I've worked through in therapy on and off for years. But again, there's something powerful about seeing it. I think especially as like a visual person, it just does amazing things for my brain. But that idea that like compassion starts with yourself and then it emanates outward. Because I know a lot of people, myself included, who did the opposite and it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And so, you know, having that sort of working from yourself and kind of manifesting out. But it brings me to kind of a question where it's like, I'm really curious, like, what your process is like where you get your insights. Are you journaling? Is it like a thought that hits you randomly? Like, what does it look like from concept to art? Just so curious about your process.
I'll tell you about it. I mean, so you have to live your life. You have to be doing other, I have to be, or I'm saying you, I have to be doing other things that besides art to make about art. If I just like hole up in my studio, I have nothing to say. And so I think you have to like live, you have to live a life and be honest about it and notice what's going on and wonder about why. And like, I think, you know, that, you know, you're talking about that idea of like the compassion diagram I made and sort of like starting with yourself. That for me at least, I need to be in that like space of like self-knowledge and listening and sort of like non-judgment in order to have anything to say, because that's the stuff I want to say. Like, you know, so like that first flash that comes in your mind that then the other part of you says, oh my gosh, don't think that, or don't do that, or you have to do this. I was like trying to like rewind and then listen and then write it down. So I was actually looking at what is okay, there is someone Okay, Amanda Stronza, I found her, on her Instagram this week, and she does this incredible thing where she finds animals. This is kind of sad, I guess, like content warning animal death, but it's really respectful. She finds animals who have like died in the road, and she stops and she carries their body off to somewhere safe, like in a grassy spot, and she just like covers it and creates like these like rings around it with flowers, and she like arranges them and like cleans them up and takes photos, and then like writes this like really beautiful like reflection that's very observant and like specific to what she has noticed about who this little creature was and the life that they lived. And oh my gosh, I was like reading this, just totally crying my eyes. I was like so moving. But when I was looking at it, I noticed something about it that was like familiar or like fell in line with like with my creative process, which is that I think that like there's so many things in our life that are like painful or that are like proof of great suffering or of vulnerability and kind of like our standard issue American emotional toolbox does not allow us to encounter that. So our impulse is to like drive by. And I think that for me, that process of like metaphorically, because I don't do this for animals who have died on the road, or it's never even occurred to me to, but to stop and to just spend, she's like used to spend 20 minutes to let something have been beautiful for being who they were and hurt anyway, and for that to be sad and for it to be beautiful and to like write something and to notice something about it. You're not fixing anything. You're not necessarily coming up with some universal truth. You're just being present to something. And people tell me a lot of the time that like they'll say stuff like, "Oh, I was looking at your art and it just made me cry because it felt true." And I think a lot of us are lonely for the kind of presence that it takes to say like, "I want to know what's true." Even if it's, I want to say what's true, like even if it's like a teary thing. And I know that's like a really abstract way to describe my process, but if that's really, I think, the work, because if without that willingness to stop what you're doing to notice something, then for me, that I have like no creative well to draw from. And so it takes a kind of like an emotional, like inner world, I guess, like self capacity to encounter something and to be honest about it and not like, I think that my art, I wouldn't want to, I would just leave this up to the viewer, but for me, I think that my art, I always try to keep it on this side of like quotes and like aphorisms and like simple truths, because I think that sometimes that's sort of like the drive-by truth, and that can happen with all sorts of art. I think can be sort of the drive-by truth where it's like, oh, I'm gonna just move like past this moment to the kind of like the agenda or the this like bold thing to say. But that for me, and this goes back to how I started out, not necessarily as trying to be like a technical artist, but to be maybe like telling the truth, is that sort of this like emotional process. And then just like my more specific process is just that I have like this notebook, and every time anything occurs to me, I write it down. And so this for like my abstract diagrams, I have always journaled since I was a kid, but I often maybe didn't feel very safe with writing things down, and so I needed like a code. So I have always sort of drawn little things that have told the story in a way that what other people maybe can't tell. And also just to make a quick, like as a shorthand, like I, for example, maybe like one piece that like I drew in my notebook just in like 5 seconds, like maybe five different times over the span of a couple of years, was like a little empty shape, like a circle or a square that I would label like who I was supposed to be or something, and then this big sort of scratching mark coming out of it that was just like, oh, I'm not that, I'm this other thing, like what do I do with that? And I came from like all sorts of different feelings, but then eventually I will come back to those ideas. I use the same like garden metaphor for my notebook, because I write things down, I like draw sketches, I redraw them every time they occur to me. Instead of like being like, oh, check, I've already written the idea down, I just draw it again because it'll come out a little bit different. So I have many, many versions of things, and I don't share much of it online. Like I have a little system for keeping track of my abstract diagram ideas, and I think I have about like 500 that I've never shared online, because those are for me, and they're, for whatever reason, I just felt like they either didn't offer something to my community, or like they weren't clear enough or whatever. And that's okay. So it's just like how I take notes on my life. And it's sort of this practice of noticing. But then the gritty process is just that, like, I write them down. And typically I'll take like a basic structure of something, like I had a really painful relationship in my life, and it was just I end up drawing like a Venn diagram of grief and freedom, and in the middle putting the text, realizing I can't save you. And then that piece I've rendered a couple different times, and most recently I've made it to like a larger like abstract painting with these sort of two big abstract shapes that overlap and stuff. So the idea is, oftentimes I leave a long gap between when I think of things and when I feel maybe complete enough with an idea to share it in such a public way, since I think with the size of my audience at this point, that feels good to me. But
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's my
No, that's
process.
so beautiful. That I am like relishing that. There's not much I enjoy more than hearing an artist's process, and especially one that I admire. It's like I'm just like drinking it all up. No, it's so beautiful. And I think there's so much to glom onto that I want to address. But the first thing that kind of stood out was when you were talking about the drive-by truth and then the other truth. And I love that, because I often wrestle with like, and I think it's a cultural thing, but it's this idea that like, it's this or that. It's the truth or it's a lie, you know? And I don't think, you know, the older I get, the more capacity for nuance I develop, the more I'm like, I don't think that framework works for very much, you know, some stuff, but not a lot. And so the visual, and I'm a visual person. So like, you have the drive-by truth where it's like, imagine you're like, you're needing to get to the hospital for some reason, something's urgent, and like there's a dead animal, and like your kid in the back of the car is like, what is that? It's like, it's an animal, circle of life, we're going to keep going. It's not that isn't truth, but it's just, it's not serving where you're going, you know, down that road or in that path. And then there's the truth of like, you're off work, it's a beautiful day, you're driving, same road, same, everything's the same. You see it, you stop, you look at it, you pick flowers, and you have a moment. And both of those things are true, but it's just different ways of sort of experiencing and processing. It's not a this or that. It's not a but this. It's just like an extension of like another possibility of the truth, which is, I think, a really beautiful thought to think about. And I think this is why artists are so vitally important, is because the less time we have, you know, the more, in my opinion, people are exploited in their labor. Resources are hard. I think that's, you know, I think that's a truth. The less time people have to like sit on a porch, and even a lay person could have a moment where you're, you know, you're observing the circle of life and you have a minute to take it in and kind of process it. And even if you don't do it in some profound artistic way, I think that's supposed to be something we all experience. And when less and less people have that time, I feel like an artist's job to sort of say, no, 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 look, slow down. This is what's here. It's this and that, you know, I think that becomes even more important and even more powerful. But I hope that analogy resonated with other people, because I know I'm going to be like kicking that around in my mind for weeks and months.
Yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying. I say to my audience a lot, like, because I have this feeling like, oh, I could go back to my other job if I needed to, that I'm like, you all sort of free me up to do this. And I share as much of my art as free as possible. Like almost all of it you can see online. Like you could, I love it. Obviously it makes all the difference when people buy prints, but I share it all freely. And I have tons of people like on my Patreon. I have like a $3 tip jar, and like hundreds of people just sort of have all come together and said, yeah, like we want you to have time to stop and what to stop in that moment, like on the road, you know what I mean? And offer something back. And it's like, I feel like everybody should be able to do that. Cause I think that that's like, and processing that as part of my like belief of like everybody being creative and stuff, but also that there is a really important like social role that is like such a privilege, but if it's not me, like other people too, or people sort of come together in a way that sort of like pool their resources that say it matters to all of us that somebody is able to do this and communicate it, because it can invite all of us into it. Not that everybody isn't also doing it, but that there is this sort of like community. Like I'm aware that if I was working all the time, like full time, there's no way that I would not be making or sharing art like this. And so it's not like a virtuous thing. It is a really genuinely like a community decision. Like me and like several thousand people have all decided that we want this in the world. And it's not like just something that I do. And I feel very aware of that, if that makes sense. It's not just a personal practice.
No, I think about that a lot, and I love that. I love the idea of like, maybe it's because I'm like a middle kid, but like of having kind of like a responsibility, being part of a crew. Like I'm always like the happiest if I can like hear my neighbors in the distance, or like I love that idea of like not being the star, but being part of. Like that's my favorite, I don't know, place to exist. But I'm curious what you think about like it's my favorite running analogy about like artists, because I talk to a lot of people and I too have the same belief of everyone is creative, but I to the point where I'm almost like obnoxious about it, where I meet people and like, what do you like to do? What's your favorite thing? And I'm always trying to convince everyone to be artists. And so a lot of people are like, listen, like I'm more science. Like I think we all have creative aspects. I do think there's probably variations to, how people's creativity is expressed, I'll say that. But I always think that an artist, and I'm leaving that term very, very wide, their job is they're like the mushrooms of an ecosystem, where you it actually kind of fits perfect with the roadkill analogy, actually. The mushrooms, the bacteria, whatever you want to say, where you sit on the broken fallen tree or the like dead possum, and your job isn't to like do something with it other than to break it down into smaller bioavailable bits that someone else can take and process and turn into something, that someone who's like doesn't have the bandwidth, the capacity, the desire to sit with like decay and like make something out of it, like they would, but they could use the carbon, they could use the nitrogen, and
Totally.
so I think that, I mean, I don't know. I just really am enjoying that this analogy is kind of tying up really nicely. But yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm a big believer, and I see this in your work, that, it's as much about like the dark and the hard, and not in some like, our culture can get it wrong in that way too, where it's a lot of like, you have to be so vulnerable or you have to share your deepest, darkest pain. But I really do think like the joy, the light, the meaning, the purpose comes from having this practice of like slow and a willingness to contend with the dark and the sad and the vulnerable as like part of process. I'm curious what you think about that.
Oh, I am so with you there. I love the mushroom analogy. I think that that is spot on. I totally agree. That's all I'm thinking is like, I just completely agree that people have, I think creativity looks different for a lot of different people. So that's partly why I think sometimes people struggle to identify it. And I also think that like, there's like sort of like emotional states of like being like really self-protective that can make it really hard to be creative. And so sometimes people haven't had, at least for myself, I can think of times in my life where I haven't really been able to access that kind of space that allows me to do that work, if that makes sense. And so sometimes I always like hope that for people. Like I always, if people don't feel creative, I just always like, I guess, hope that they're able to access it in some way. But I think that interpreting art and engaging art is also a creative act. And so when people are like saying like, oh, I'm not creative, but I kind of like can make use of the carbon and the nitrogen, I'm like, yeah, but then like you're growing, that is part of it. Like, I don't know. It to me, it's such a, it, this kind of art feels like this sort of community way of knowing. Like I don't know that I'm really like in a good position to be like a critic on like art, the art world. We'll go back to the art world, but I do think that sometimes like the art that is like situated in real time, that's situated in community, like as communication rather than as like a declaration, can be undervalued. For example, like art that is like completed in somebody's studio and then put in a museum has a certain like declarative, authoritative sort of idea around it that is valued. And then, for example, maybe art that is like made in response to a comment someone left on another art that you made, that is the end goal of it, maybe is just to share it on Instagram as part of a conversation and like a way of community knowledge and community like healing, to use sort of like a generalized word there, that that can be devalued. But to me, I think that this kind of like communication, real time, art that is like situated in between the maker and the perceiver immediately, and then can be even like revised and changed and progressed in this like really dynamic, instant sort of thing. I think that that's unique to this moment in history. I think it is valuable. I think it's worth really considering and respecting and kind of exploring for its own unique value. No, I'm not trying to like say that, like trying to like validate it, because I don't really care, but there, I do feel like if we don't see that with respect and openness and care, that we're missing out on something, because it is a kind of use of art that is both producing something like beautiful, but also like what you're talking about, playing a functional role in our communities, that I believe is like critical to the kind of alliances and safety and self-knowledge and compassion that we need to like face. I mean, going really big here, but to face like the massive crises that we're facing, we need artists' work. We need people breaking down, you know, the using your mushroom analogy, because that's offering something critical that cannot be like mass manufactured and purchased on Amazon. That without that, we disintegrate and we lose our sort of collective power. And so I don't know, to me, it goes from being like making art Instagram to like really significant pretty quick. But that's the way that I, not just my art, but like so many other artists whose art also is sort of like situated in this context, like quote unquote internet artists, which I think can be kind of a pejorative term. I just think that they're like cultural workers in a way that is different than some of our historical artist traditions, but in a way it's like very important. I feel like I've gone a different direction than the original question, but that's just
I
all
love
what
it.
Came up to mind for me.
I am like delighted right now. No, I'm having the best time. It's no, it's perfect. And I really like when anytime I hear sort of that, you know, the comparison, the art world proper versus like us, the rest of the artists. And I have totally what you were saying with like, it means something different if it's like framed and in a gallery. I play with that a lot. I have a whole series of like, I call them like my tacky pastry paintings, where it's like a pastry. There's like elements to it. I won't go totally into it, but it's all very like visually very ostentatious and over the top. It's like pattern and color and glitter. And I always think that the tackiest thing about those is the fact that I put my own gold frame on them. There's something about like fucking the hierarchy a little, where I have self-ordained that this is of value, but that should allude to the fact that I am, and maybe overly so, but deeply critical of like the current art world hierarchy, not everyone in it, but the idea that there is this order of like, well, museum art, if it's on a pedestal, it's this, and everything kind of goes down. But I think, you know, something you said that I wish I could like highlight with big yellow highlighter is like, that there's important work being done when you have that more communal sort of art. And the way I like visualize it is, you know, the art world as it is now, and it's obviously changing and there's good people working in every industry, but it's very top down, right? It's like the blue chip, and it like trends and ideas sort of trickle down, and there's like a status cultural capital element to it. Whereas you making a piece of art, someone making a response piece of art, or even like, I think sometimes of like, I have a body of work and like a bunch of other people start painting it. I always think of it like that's even its own communal, like we're setting up a network that's less hierarchy top down and more like there is no up and down. Like we're all like, I made something and you responded and then it turned into this. And I think that's how humans naturally are. I just think our hierarchy is just so rigid that it's like, anyways, I don't know if any of that made sense, but that's exactly what I was picturing. And to your credit, yes, I do think that that's incredibly important, you know, not only as artists and people in a community, but if we're wanting to buck the hierarchy, and top down works in a lot of other industries. It's not exclusive to the art world by any means. But setting up those connections.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you.
I love it. I love it. I feel like I could talk to you for another 3 hours until my voice is hoarse, but I want to respect your time. And I really want people to hop off and go check out your page and your website. Can I offer you this time to sort of like, what are you up to? What are you doing? How can people connect with you? How can they learn from you? If someone wants to connect, where should they go?
Yeah, I think I'm mostly on Instagram at Britt Chida, BRITCHIDA. But I really have been loving my newsletter. I just think that it's like a little bit of long form, a little bit more like personal than like, you know, dealing with the algorithms. I named my newsletter Algorithm Free Art years ago when they first started introducing the algorithm instead of the timeline. And anyway, it still kind of has that feeling. So you can find me on Substack at Britt Chida. And then my art is all on my website, brittchida.com. And then I have a Patreon if you want to be part of the community of people that let me do this work. My Patreon is actually like a lot of, it's like a mostly a prints and sticker subscription. So we send out physical rewards, but there's also some other stuff there. So there's that. And then also I teach, I have this online teaching community called Easy Does It, where I teach creative process. So I teach about what I say that I teach how to paint, not how to paint in like a technical way, not how you teach how to paint, but how to actually paint. Like, let's say you know how to paint, but then how do you actually get yourself to do it this week? And so that's sort of like, you know, there's more to it than that, but it's a bit more of the mindset, maybe more than skill set type. I mean, there's some skill set stuff, but just so people have an expectation of it. Anyway, it's called Easy Does It at the easydoesitart.com. And then just to be totally shameless, if anybody wants a print, I'm going to set up a discount code that's NSA, like not sorry, art 20. So NSA 20 on my website that'll work on a print if you would like to stop by. Yeah, you don't have to be new. Anyone can use it. So if people are listening and want to go get
like,
something
wait
else,
a minute.
Go get something else.
That's beautiful. I love that. Thank you for sharing that with my listeners. I know they will appreciate it. And Britt, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Again, I could very self-indulgently chat with you forever, and hopefully we'll get together in person. I know we have some mutuals, and we'll, yeah. I would love to like have like
I
a
would love
chat
that.
At like a fire, or you know what I mean?
Something. Yes. Yeah, we've got to make it happen. That would be a joy.
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being here. I wanted to also encourage you guys to leave a review. The feedback is incredibly helpful. And if you leave a review, I will read your handle or your name on the following week's episode. Take care, y'all, and happy creating.